is Thursday, January 15th. This is Irish Illustrated Insider, and today I'm joined by Pete Sampson, The Athletic, Tim Priester of Irish Illustrated, and guys, we're going to have almost entirely question and answer today, but Pete, since you are not on our post-press conference emergency podcast, I guess it wasn't an emergency, post-press conference podcast with Marcus Freeman, I wanted to get your thoughts on Marcus Freeman's thoughts yesterday, the first time we spoke with him in over a month, and quite a few things happened as he dropped that joke early on.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of material to cover. I was surprised that we were able to get through as much as we could. You know, obviously, the things that I would love to go deeper on, one, I asked about just what, and I know this is a question later, but like the change in university procedure to make undergraduate transfers, you know, palatable, acceptable, greenlit, fast-tracked, whatever sort of term you want to use is, I mean, it is a philosophical change, and that's something that I really would like to write about this offseason, is like how Notre Dame got to from point A to point B. And it was nice to hear some like, all right, what do we have to do better in 2026 so we don't have a replay of 2025, opposed to the ACC tweeted this or the committee, you know, screwed us, you know, whether that be scheduling, Marcus talking about sitting down with Ron Paulus about that, whether that be strength and conditioning, figuring out how you start the season much sharper than what you have last year. And, you know, I think that's been kind of an ongoing thing. So it was nice to put a bow on last season. That was kind of felt overdue, not just in the sense of like how dramatically it ended, not in the fact that like, you know, Marcus Freeman had been ducking us. So yeah, that was good. And then, you know, just to be able to spin it forward a little bit, I thought was refreshing, because I think it's been, this offseason is, I think, going to be one of the, not just literally one of the longest ones that we've ever covered, I think also figuratively and emotionally and frustratingly one of the longest ones we will have ever covered.
TP, right before we went on, we had news that a very important defensive tackle was hired by Notre Dame football. Excuse me, signed, hired, whatever you want to say. you made the joke there was no podcast jinx this time, but there was a Thursday Thoughts jinx, right?
Yeah. I just finished my Thursday Thoughts, and Eric Thomas is like, well, should I wait on it? Should I run it? I'm like, run it. It's not obsolete, but there's no Teon Gray mentioned in that story, so please keep that in mind. And as it relates to what Pete Sampson said, yes, it was absolutely long overdue, but nobody turns the page better than Marcus Freeman. I mean, you come out of that, some of the things he's talking about moving into next year, and you know, you get a little bit motivated yourself sitting there talking about not leaving anything to doubt and all those things. And he is the best at turning the page, and he turned the page yesterday. And again, I think this would be one of those situations where Notre Dame will look at it and think, maybe we should have done that a little bit earlier. The whole Mishawaka wrestling fiasco kind of forced their hand a little bit to go ahead and get him out in front of the media, in front of the public. But he did a great job. Teon Gray.
We should point out it is a New Prairie wrestling fiasco that took place at Mishawaka.
I'm sorry, it was
Mishawaka
at
Mishawaka. Absolutely did the right thing there.
Yeah, I did. Did I mention
New Prairie fiasco? Yeah.
Did I mention this the other day in a podcast that 40 some years ago, 40 more than 40 years ago, I covered the L. Smith Invitational for the South Bend Tribune, and I didn't get in any trouble doing it. But the L. Smith, and I knew L. Smith.
Before you had pens in your hand, you didn't have a pen in your hand.
Yeah, I assume L. Smith is long gone since then. But he was a legend. That's who the invitation is named after. But never attended one quite as controversial as the one a couple weeks ago.
Well, we mentioned yesterday a little bit on the podcast that Notre Dame obviously still needed a second defensive tackle, and we're starting to compare and contrast necessary things. Tim, Teon Gray, I'll turn it over to you.
Teon Gray, you know, I think I mentioned in yesterday's podcast that his name did come up on Wednesday, and I think I mentioned that, boy, he's gained a lot of weight since he left high school. But look, they wanted a big defensive tackle. And his calling card coming out of high school is his first step. He's extremely quick, probably not quite as quick as he was 40 pounds ago or whatever it was. But look, they need big bodies. Charlie Partridge was looking for big bodies. They looked at Horace Lockett from down in at UCF, and that didn't work out. And so now Brew is not a big body, but he's very, very strong. And I do want to, somebody pointed out, I think it was on YouTube, that you know, he did have seven tackles for loss. I was kind of downplaying his ability to shoot a gap and make a tackle for loss. I think he does it more with strength, though, than he does. I talked about he's kind of has that nice sidestep move, but he doesn't always put that together with some other with a combination of moves. But when you're benching 700 pounds, you're pretty strong and you can move some people. So you don't have a big body there, but you do with Teyon Gray. I still don't, you know, had they not made mistakes the first weekend, they might have had a better shot at Ibaragba, who's also not a real big body, but really quick off the snap and a playmaker. So I don't think that they have still fulfilled what they were considering prior to the opening of the portal, because defensive tackle was their number one responsibility. But two very viable, you know, Marcus Freeman talked about Breu, about his motor, which isn't always the case with big guys, and that he has it. So if you got something to work with there, and Teyon Gray helps close that gap that was at defensive tackle.
Before we get to questions, guys, I want to remind everybody the NFL playoffs will play the divisional round this weekend, and I've been looking to find the best deal on 49ers and Bears tickets, Jack Freeman, both for my family and friends, but also as a memorable gift idea. That's why I want to offer the sponsor of today's Burning Up the Boards, SeatGeek, a huge shout out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. So whether you're an Irish fan looking for a ticket to the AC/DC concert next September, or any of these playoff matchups down the road, SeatGeek has your back. Each ticket is rated on a scale of 1 to 10, so you know you're getting a good deal. Look for the green dots. Green means good, red means bad, but every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee. And of course, I have a code for you guys. You can use Irish10, that's all capital letters and the number 10, for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. 10% off any tickets with promo code Irish10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app, and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you, SeatGeek. Guys, our first question today comes from AeroFans624. Marcus Freeman mentioned how admissions has been told the landscape of college football athletics has changed and that there are student athletes Notre Dame needed to get. Who deserves the most credit here behind the scenes for these adjustments? Is it Bavakwa, Freeman, Father Dowd, or someone else? Pete, I know you wanted to get in on this, and you also want to get into it in the summer.
Yeah, I would go Bavakwa and then up. I don't like Freeman getting something that he wanted is not, I wouldn't put it on Freeman to be like, you know, did he want something? Did he advocate for something? Yes. Is he the one that went to admissions and was like, hey, can we have a better sort of line of communication between the deans and admissions? Probably not. And that's something that, I mean, that's a university decision, not an athletics decision. So I think that my hunch is that credit for that would go from Bavakwa and then up from there. And obviously, you know, Mickey Kidder, who's head of admissions, is a good advocate and has been incredibly, I think, active in terms of, look, how can I support what you guys need within the context of Notre Dame, opposed to, I mean, I remember when Brandon Joseph hopped in the portal, there was like, can we get him in? I don't know, that dean's on vacation. Like, I'm sure the deans of schools are still going on vacation, but that's not really a thing anymore in terms of like, oh, we'll get to that next week. It's like, how about we get to that today?
How about an untenable situation? Tim Priest or the deans on vacation? Well, yeah, the portal is.
when a statement like that is made, like, you kind of you understand when people from the outside look at Notre Dame and they're like, what? And so a statement like that makes you do something along those lines. Pete, yesterday, Mickey Kidder's name came up during the podcast yesterday, and I brought up the point that Jack Swarbrick made to me on several occasions is about trying to crack it's not admissions, it's the deans of the colleges, right, where you have to make a breakthrough. And so I agree. I mean, Bavakwa, and did Marcus Freeman go to them and advocate for this? No, but I think the general love and respect for Marcus Freeman certainly didn't hurt in this situation if Pete Bavakwa was advocating for Marcus Freeman and his football program. So, and then, you know, who's responsible or who gets credit? The deans of the schools, if they're the ones that, and they are the ones that are relenting in this situation. So, yeah, I mean, I generally agree. I think it'd start with Bavakwa and then you work your way up.
I would also credit winning, because people like that. Like the 2024 season, very popular at Notre Dame, not just in the athletic department. So I think people would like more seasons like that.
I tell you what, the way that worked out, that Notre Dame hosted the first on-campus college football playoff game, and South Bend loved it. And like the, you know, the dorm stayed open extra. Schools around here, I mean, well, I shouldn't say schools around here because there's a pretty high influx of coaches at St. Pius, but late start for game, like when they were on month championship game, you're like, you have a 2-hour delay. Everybody enjoy the game. Like the whole community of Notre Dame, everything involving Notre Dame changed with that playoff run last year. Like, it absolutely did. And I think that impacted how mad everybody was. I mean, it was, you would be mad anyways, a Notre Dame fan, but I feel like everybody's like, what? That's not happening. I think, you know, and 95% of the people didn't know Notre Dame wasn't going to get a home playoff game anyway, if that happened. But it's just, it really, 2024 was unique.
It really was. You know, I mean, we were, each of us were at the bowl games, the playoff games, and, you know, you're in different settings. And, you know, I think that you start, it's obviously a conglomeration, a gathering of Notre Dame fans. But I think what Pete says about at Notre Dame beyond, you know, beyond just Notre Dame fans, the people, the employees, the behind the scenes people that work in Notre Dame were geeked about everything that happened in 2024. So yeah, Notre Dame needs another, they need another feel good story like that, especially coming after what the way the 2025 season ended.
The media does too, Pete, because we will not be part of the convivial atmosphere on the yacht for this media. Do you know that I said that to you, Tim Priester?
Keep that to yourself.
The media parties on a yacht this for this championship game. So,
yeah. What?
Yeah, that's what's going to happen. So there.
Let me turn my phone off.
Yeah, go ahead and do that. But yeah, it's on a yacht. So there we go. We're just not there this time. On that note, VA Doc and Irish from A2 have a question, and then I'm going to throw another one on there. VA Doc 88, in hindsight, is there any room for criticism of Notre Dame's portal performance? In hindsight, would signing Marsh have been a net positive for the program? By that, I think he means maybe they would have gotten one receiver, Tim. I'm going to take it that way for that part. Irish from A2 simply adds, what happened from week one to week two of the portal cycle? I have my own sarcastic answer that I will not use.
Pete, they go invited, ahead.
Invited people to answer.
In hindsight, is there room for criticism? Sure, there's room for criticism for everything. We criticize Notre Dame's performance when they win 70-7. So I think that we can criticize the portal performance a little bit. In hindsight, would signing Nick Marsh have been a net positive? Is there anything that you guys like doing more than spending somebody else's money? It's because it's super fun. So, yeah, it would have been great if they signed Nick Marsh and Igbaragba. But, I mean, like Igbaragba, I was told sort of in passing, like, if we wanted to spend $2 million on a defensive tackle, we could have done that and we could have signed him. That was just not what we thought we should do. So I think that, for how inefficient and bizarre the market is in the transfer portal, there is a cost-benefit analysis you have to do. And I think that they're going to be very happy with how defensive tackle ended up. I would challenge anyone listening to tell me anything about Xavier Gilliam or Horace Lockett from a month and a half ago. These are names that popped up. Like, Igbaragba is different. Nick Marsh is different. I think you could argue that with the way the roster is set up, that a finishing piece like Marsh would have been worth the investment more than maybe Porter and Graham together, but that's just sort of a strategic decision that they made, you know. And I think that getting Nick Marsh on campus so you can evaluate it would have been something you should have done. But beyond that, I think that they're going to be pretty much thrilled with how it all ended up.
Yeah, I think, you know, Chaz Coleman's another really, really exciting, not that he's a tackle, but he's another really exciting defensive end that whose name came up early on. Did I know about Xavier Gilliam before the portal? No, but he was part of a three-man rotation at Penn State that was really good. And I think that had they gotten him, had that worked out, there were some other issues involved with him, I think he would have been a starter. He was already a part of a three-man rotation at Penn State. So I think it will all work out. The first weekend was not handled well. And so that, you know, that throws them into a level of chaos right out of the gate. And then they stabilized it because you had no choice but to stabilize it, because you had most of the guys that were set up for visits on that Monday ended up not coming for a visit. So there was a frantic nature to the start of it, but they pulled it all together, just as you would expect a Marcus Freeman led group to do that. And I just, back to the original question about Marsh. Marsh is a standout offensive lineman. So is the question, do they not get the two?
You said offensive lineman, Tim. But wide receiver.
Wide receiver. Thank you. You know, you wanted as many guys as you could plug and play because you're a national championship team in 2026. The positive flip side of that is you've got seven guys with a combined 16 years of eligibility. So it's good for the long term. I don't think that they went into it with that intent, because I think the iron's hot to strike in 2026 and 2027. Will be a bit of a transition, but now you've got these young, you've got Porter and Graham. I like Graham a little bit more than Porter. You got these two young, exciting receivers. So they made a typical Marcus Freeman. He made the best of a situation that it started out slowly. It started out frantically at Notre Dame the first weekend because some mistakes were made as far as getting things rolling with visits. But I think that considering the way it began, they made the best of it.
Well, there's room to criticize because Notre Dame is criticizing itself internally on how they started the portal. So that's why there's room to criticize. But there's a couple questions on it. I want to push like the grade questions until it's really done, because we could answer what's the final grade for every time we do a podcast for the next three podcasts. So yeah, I'll push that one off a little bit.
Okay.
I like this one, TP, from Packy P. Rank the top five ads over the past month, including coaches.
Was that in there? I didn't see that, including coaches.
Yeah, it says transfers and coaches.
Oh, okay. I thought it might have been, it's part of the email that you sent me that I never received.
That you don't receive?
Okay. Yeah, right. Wow. Partridge number one. Partridge definitely number one.
He'd agree. Could you say that too, Pete?
Yeah.
I don't know if I would, just because you have to put somebody on the field. If they added me and you as defensive tackle.
Well, no, I understand, but
Charlie Partridge doesn't. He's like, what the hell is this?
He still has to develop. I mean, Teon Gray and Breeu aren't fully developed defensive tackles.
No, Keeley's not. Paul Mullins and Sean Cevallano.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They need a Charlie Partridge to develop Burgess, a guy like that. Burgess, especially, because I think that he's. They think he's really close, but I'd put Partridge one. I'd put Keeley two, just because he's Keon Keeley, and I think that Partridge's going to bring out the most in a guy with an incredible amount of talent. I'd put Graham three. I think I'd put Sanders four. And since I still haven't listed a defensive tackle, I don't know, Breeu or Porath, because I think Porath is really going to stabilize the kicking.
He's pretty important, yeah.
I think I would go Breeu one, Gray two, Partridge three. I don't really have a good read on who's better between Porter and Graham. Talking to people around Ohio State, it sounds like Porter was the higher. They were more upset to lose Porter than Graham. Another thing I heard was Notre Dame got into a bidding war with Ohio State for both of them. So if you want to talk about another new day at Notre Dame, you're winning a bidding war against Ohio State for a wide receiver times two. Then I put the kicker Porath number five, just because you need a kicker.
Yeah, I can't go anywhere. I like Sanders a lot, but I can't leave what I said when Notre Dame had no signees. They need two defensive tackles that can play and start and rotate. They need a kicker that can play and start and rotate. And they need a wide receiver that can be wide receiver at worst to be. So I'm going with the defensive tackles, the receivers, and the kicker, because you can't function. I think if Notre Dame had Al Washington at defensive line coach and Max Bulla at linebacker, and they got all these guys, they'd be great. You know, I think if Charlie Partridge came in and you didn't get these defensive tackles and you walked out there with Hughes and Mookum,
no,
Burgess, who's the other?
Hear me mention Mookum.
No, I'm saying if these defensive tackles aren't here, I don't know what in the world Charlie Partridge works with. Like, you can't.
Well, I would agree, but their number one priority was defensive tackles. It was good that they got tackles.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Those are my number one.
Yeah, that's why those are number one and number two on my list.
Yeah, that's why they're number. It's the most important things. I think that's the most important thing. But Partridge is a great addition, too, for recruiting purposes, because he's very well respected as a recruiter as well. So that's, I mean, that's where Notre Dame struggled, defensive tackle, I think. Not, I think they had good defensive tackles, like Riley Mills, Howard Cross developed. Last year's defensive tackles were better than I thought they'd be. Did you not think that? Do you think the defensive tackles run defense was the problem last year?
No, absolutely. I can't disagree. I can't disagree.
Their upside was just
they've also, you know, stocked their roster with, and I'm not going to say their names out or, you know, I mean, they've stocked the roster with guys that can't play either. Yeah, well, so
that's why the recruiting aspect is hugely important.
I get that part. I'm not underestimating that. I don't know that they reached the level that they had intended when they originally went into this with landing defensive tackles, but I'm glad they got the two that they do. I love Breeu's strength. I love Gray's upside. And I love the fact that Charlie Partridge is going to be the one that's instructing them along with Burgess and Mullins and some of these other guys that we've been talking about.
I think just on this, like the Partridge Keeley connection, I think is really interesting. Like, I think Breeu and Gray will be really good. Breeu, I like a lot. Keeley is just, I don't know what they're going to get out of him. You know, he's your third defensive end, so you don't need to get a ton out of him. Clearly, he's a huge body. I mentioned on this podcast before, he's like, you know, first on the bus, off the bus kind of guy. So it's like if there's something to unlock with Keeley, I'm pretty confident Charlie Partridge is going to be the guy to unlock it. I don't think that's like the most critical thing for next season to, you know, reach the heights that it could reach, but I do think it's an incredibly interesting storyline.
Well, if Bryce Young doesn't make greater strides than he did last year, you're going to need Keon Keeley to really supplement.
I really liked Keeley in that Oklahoma game. I remember watching and thinking to myself, this would be, I didn't like anything in the IU game, but I really liked Keeley in the Oklahoma game. Did you see that? We were talking on the message board. Someone said Mike Martin or Marcus Freeman are playing chestnut checkers. And somebody responded, I thought they were playing football. And the next we were talking about it, we're like, well, Alabama was playing checkers, but they're out of the football field that day.
That they were. They were that, especially in November. We have a question from the Friedert. Who are the returning player, two, the incoming freshman, and three, incoming portal addition that you are most interested in seeing in the spring?
Returning player for me, I mean, I guess it's Jaden Greathouse to see what he's done with his time off. I need Jaden Greathouse has to be really good again. I mean, they can't bring him back for $700,000 or whatever his thing was last year and not have Jaden Greathouse be him. But he and CJ Carr had not meshed, at least statistically or game plan wise, while he played for four games. He had one consequential catch in four games while Notre Dame started 2-2.
It's a great catch, too.
Well, that was a nice catch.
A really great catch.
Well, he makes great catches, Tim Priester. So maybe in the spring, this is saying, so like, I'm not sure Keedron Young's ready yet. I'll go Greathouse for the veteran.
Pete. Returning player. I mean, this is kind of a cop-out, but like, I want to see where CJ Carr is coming back off last season. Because like, he was very, very good for a first-time starter. And we say this all the time, like the good for a freshman thing. Like, he was good for a first-time starter. I mean, he was better than good for a first-time starter. He set the pass efficiency mark at Notre Dame. I think the thing I'm most interested in is, like, what does CJ Carr look like without Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price? Because teams are just going to play him so much differently. I'm not sure we're going to get even close to an answer on that during spring ball. So if it's a spring ball question, I'd probably go with Jagasaw. But, like, the bigger picture one is definitely Carr for me.
Yeah, for me, it's Aeneas Williams. I mean, because obviously he moves up to the number one spot. And I think we all just want to see, you know, people are going to talk about being spoiled by big plays. They were spoiled by big plays big time this past season. And I don't know that Aeneas Williams is that guy, but he's the number one guy. And so I'm very curious to see him. And then my one guy on defense would be Burgess, Christopher Burgess, who I know that Notre Dame likes him. Still got to put on some weight. Originally, you know, we were talking about defensive end, but I think that came to a close pretty quickly last year. And now they have a huge need there. So those two guys for me, I would also say Elijah Burris, just to see how much progress he's made in terms of the playbook and things like that. Something Mike Denbrock talked about when we spoke to him last year. So those would be my guys. Tim?
Freshman for me is Osborne.
Yeah, that's mine too.
And then,
oh, I didn't say him.
Yeah, and my transfer is Keeley, because that's the upside there for me is what I want to see. As I said, the defensive tackles did pretty well last year for what we thought they were going to do. Were they championship level? No, because they had a bad rush efficiency against Miami and teams that needed, and A&M was able to move the ball with three short yardage touchdowns too. So they weren't great, but I thought they were going to be the reason Notre Dame didn't go to the playoffs.
Yeah. And there's so many freshmen to look forward to. Premer's not going to be there in the spring, but
right, that was my first choice.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Donham, I want to see how far he's come along. I mean, two of my favorites from the class, Pouncey and Finley. I'm curious about Iwatade because I think physically and then just as far as technique and stuff, it's he's a little bit down the road. But I'm really looking forward to seeing just how big Iwatade is by the time he gets here late, you know, in the summer. And then when we see him late summer, Fitzgerald, I think, is another fascinating one because, you know, because of his bloodlines. And, you know, we talk about interior defensive linemen. I don't think Elijah Golden will be ready, but boy, sure would be great if by some chance he would be. I don't think that he will be in 2026, but really looking forward to seeing a bunch of the freshmen. And then for me, the transfer would be Keeley.
Yeah, I think transfer wise, and I don't know. It's either Porter or Graham for spring. I'm not sure how much we're going to see from Porter. I was told that he had knee surgery,
right?
So and then by default, it's Graham just because it's the receiver position, and they need. Can they get a boost? You know, potential wise, I just want to see what Joey O'Brien and Rodney Dunham look like. Cause I, you know, every few years there's a freshman where you're like, holy crap, look at that guy. And I feel like those two guys might be fit into the holy crap, look at that guy category. So
that's an interesting category.
You know, it's just like the day one, like, oh my God, you know, Mayer, like Kyle Hamilton was that way. Stephon Tuivasa, Manti Te'o, Mayer to a certain extent. Well, Kyle Rudolph.
He's
you know, one. I just want to see, like, are these guys as impressive physically in person as I think they will be? Because, you know, Bryce Young was that way a couple years ago. Doesn't mean you're going to be like a star right away, but like, you know what a great looking football player is supposed to look like in pads. And I feel like those guys will fit that.
In pads, good point. Because you know who doesn't look like a great looking football player out of pads when he walks up to interview in his unassuming manner and he just sits down? Leonard Moore.
I was going to say.
Then you see him in pads, you're like, do you grow every time you put on pads? It is incredible. How much I wish I could somehow get somebody to understand this. When he just comes up and talks to us, you're like, wait, there's no way you do what you do.
Oh, and he's great too. I mean, he's so, he's just a, when you talk to him, he's just a kid, you know, just having a conversation with you. He's awesome on a couple different
levels. It's like he knows he's going to be a future all pro or something. He's just like, I'll talk to you.
He's pretty. Nothing to worry about. I think he's pretty unassuming about that, though. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but yeah, you know, you have players like that. Not everybody looks like Adonis when they, you know, come visit with us.
No, but then in the pads, he does. When you see him in pads, you're like, that guy's arms are the longest arms I've ever seen.
No, exactly. I was going to say that. You're right. That's where you see the length.
Yeah, it's nuts. Timely question, because I think Pete was about to get into this. CMU Pens fan, since every question this week will be portal-related, I want to try something different. What does CJ Carr have to improve on for Notre Dame to get to the title?
I mean, I think he's got to be able to throw into too high safety and, like, make better decisions. You know, he loves to make kind of, I just call it, like, Hollywood throws. He loves Hollywood throws. I like watching them. Yeah. Sometimes they get picked off, though, and that's not great. So, you know, the offense is not going to be built around 4 and 24 anymore. It's going to be built around the quarterback. So that's, you know, he's got all the talent in the world to like just take this and run with it. He's, you know, the improvement he's going to make from year one to year two, I think, is going to be immense. It's just he's going to have to answer different questions than what was asked of him last year and how he does that. And think, you know, look, they open against Wisconsin and Rice, not Miami and A&M. So he's got a chance to kind of do a few practice tests before it really gets real.
I'll be quick and to the point because I've said it many times before. Strength and physical conditioning, to me, those are the differentiating factors for CJ Carr in year two.
Yeah, strength was one of mine, to be that guy that just kind of sheds it in the pocket when someone gets a hand on not the way Brady Quinn could, but the difference between Quinn and Clausen in college, Clausen was a better passer, was that if you grab Jimmy Clausen, he was going down. That was a sack.
Ooh, especially that first year.
It was hilarious. So somewhere in the middle, CJ Carr, you know. But the other one for me is, because I think this is not asking too much, he's a lifer quarterback kid, or grown man now, graduate level, even though he's a junior, blitz recognition, coverage recognition, everything at the line, because as Pete said, there's no 4 and 24. It's going to be built around him turning possible poor situations into advantages for Notre Dame. I think he can do it. Like, it'd be like, you know, Tommy Reese could do that. He just didn't have the athleticism or arm to make it matter quite as much. If CJ Carr could do that, he does have the athleticism and arm to make a difference there.
I love the point about, you know, in accordance with what I'm saying here, just shedding that hand that, you know, Jimmy Clausen was knocked down like a dried up leaf his freshman year.
Yeah, yeah. And even as a junior, though, you could still get Clausen. You know what I mean? Like he was like a regular, he was like a great quarterback that was a regular human being.
Well, I don't think that he grew up, slinging the football all over the yard. I don't think emphasizing strength was something that was on his radar back then. And that's been a while now. I mean,
there's a question I did not think we'd be getting heading into his fifth season. Jim Bonnie CRS. Isn't it Booney that I typed?
I think it's Booney.
Jim,
yeah.
Jim Booney CRS. My fault. He's been on here a lot. Jalen Snead playing as a fifth year is a great overall story. It's a testament of Snead's character, and I think he can improve ND's defense. How will he be best deployed next year, considering KVA will be out for maybe a month, maybe more than a month?
Well, I think the KVA part, at first you're like, well, maybe he wouldn't, because KVA is an inside linebacker, C is an outside linebacker. But when they get in third and long situations, KVA is awesome at that. And I think Snead is really good too. So I think that's where Snead is going to get some more work for the first 2 months of the season than he did last year. So I think that's how can he improve Notre Dame's defense? He can be KVA, but just on third down.
Well, I think that's where his strength is on the edge. I think it's almost kind of a weakness at inside linebacker, and I think Osbury gets those snaps instead. But just be disruptive. I mean, remember 2 years ago, the 2024 season, he led the team in third down stops, and that was no small feat for a guy that wasn't getting necessarily consistent snaps. So just make your overall, you know, athletic ability made known. He plays with such high energy, you know, play consistent enough, know the playbook well enough, know what the grand scheme of everything is a little bit better. And I think he'll be a greater contributor to the cause.
Yeah. I totally agree with the pass rush and packages thing. I would like to see a little more consistency when he does rotate in at inside linebacker.
Because right.
I assume Washington's going to continue with the rotation that Bulla. Because he has Foremo too. Remember, we're remembering
right.
this. So you can do the 4-man rotation even without KVA. You'd like to see no drop off in physicality between Snead and Osbury, and there is.
Right.
That's, you know, there is.
I mean, consistency around the football. Osbury's always around the football. Yeah.
This is incredible, though. Every offseason, he would be on the list when you're making your who's going to transfer list, have the story ready. This is the first time we didn't. Have a Jalen Snead story ready.
It's true.
I mean, it really is. It's that, and obviously they really want him. I know KVA was part of it, but you could have lived with Foremo, Bowen. And
yeah, it's similar. If KVA was healthy, is Snead here? I don't know.
Maybe not because of Snead's choice, though. You know.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's similar to not the same, but like, you know, you bring back Bauman last year. You weren't going to bring back Bauman, then Cooper Flanagan tears his Achilles. You're like, actually, could you come back? So. Not the same thing, but you know, you adjust to the reality you're dealing with from an injury point of view, and it was a smart adjustment probably for Notre Dame and for Snead.
Not the same price tag either, probably for Bauman and Snead.
Nope.
We have a question from RB Irish 09. Is this Notre Dame's best team returning on paper since 2006? Name two things that might stop the Irish from reaching the semifinals next year.
Pete, may I answer the first part first?
Yes, please.
I think last year's team was the best team returning on paper since 2006. With Jeremiah Love and Darian Price, and I had no doubt CJ Carr was going to be really, really good. He could have exceeded our expectations, I guess, but I don't know. I thought he was going to be great, didn't you, at some point during the season? Like, at this point last year, we were really happy about CJ Carr turning
out.
I think last year's team on paper, I think the 2024 team on paper was better.
Thank you. That's the best team of the last 3 years. Like, I realize that there's been a lot of like build up to this season. I think in reality, this it wouldn't shock me if this was like the least talented team that they've had of the last 3 years.
Up top.
Yeah, which is crazy to say. I mean, they could easily still go all the way. But I'm really reluctant to get into the best since X conversations in August, never mind in January.
Yeah, so we're talking about the teams that we've just now mentioned in this brief conversation, 2024, 2025, and 2026.
That
RBI Irish 09 is referencing. Marcus Freeman's got it going on. He's built something pretty good here.
Xavier Watts is the returning National Defensive Player of the Year. I would love to have the returning National Defensive Player. Oh. Leonard Moore's close. I mean, Leonard Moore is the returning equal of Xavier Watts going into that.
Yeah. But, I mean, in 24, you thought you had Benjamin Morrison coming back too.
That's true. Morrison Watts thing
would you rather? It's just like kind of we could go. Would you rather on the entire roster, like Cross and Mills or Brew and Hughes? I mean, that's not.
It's true. I mean,
yeah. I think this secondary, could be like one of the best secondaries ever here. Yeah. But that's different than saying like the entire roster is. I mean, like. You had Jordan Faison coming back. And then just off last year's stats, I think the next leading receiver in yardage is Micah Gilbert. And the next leading returning receiver in yardage is Luke Talich. So, like, they've got a lot of stuff to get figured out. Tight end, who knows? I mean, the offensive line's got to take a step forward. So, I think when Notre Dame internally was like 2026 is going to be the year, like a year and a half ago, they probably assumed Jadarian Price was still going to be here. You know, I think they had some guys get better than what they thought they were going to be.
Where's Teyon Gray from originally?
St. Louis.
He is from St. Louis. I was going to say, is he aware of the weather in South Bend today?
If anybody that arrived on campus has, I want to explain to people this. This is, since I lived in this house, easy to do it because I was shoveling, the most snow I've ever seen overnight in my entire life.
I would agree. And it's sunny. It's sunny and beautiful right now, but
it's gorgeous outside now with a foot and a half of snow.
South Bend just got caught in this like centrifuge of snow.
It's insane.
And it just like focused right on South Bend.
It's the most falling snow I've ever seen since 2006.
I don't know if I told
but it's, you. But snowfall's been pretty damn good in 2024.
Yeah, but last,
and
I mean, the last 2 years, man, it's.
There's been a lot of snowfall last 2 years. You know what, Pete, I was walking into that yesterday, the press conference, because Jack, I don't know if I told you this, there was pellet snow, like it hurt.
Yeah.
It just started snowing. There was no snow on the ground. It literally hurt your face. You have to walk down the corridor around the stadium to get to the press conference. My first thought was Manti would not have come here if this is what he had that weekend. Like, no matter what, it was no Manti would have been, even it was too much for Manti. He would not be here. That's how bad the snow was yesterday. So congratulations. Maybe people are listening to the portal. Miami players are like, oh, I guess I'm not going there if they listen to our podcast. Sorry about that. So, two things that might stop the Irish from reaching the semifinals next year. Why don't we save that for the next 47 podcasts and we can move on to question number eight.
Okay.
From all Irish right. Jet. The Peach Bowl broadcast mentioned that IU's portal strategy is to prioritize players with previous production rather than potential. This question's for you, Tim Priester. This cycle, Notre Dame seems to be prioritizing potential over previous production more than previous portal cycles. In other words, I think he's talking about guys like Fields, Bo Collins, that.
Yep.
Is this a shift in strategy for Notre Dame or a product of who was available and interested in Notre Dame this year?
I think it was a product of the process. And, you know, I mean, Notre Dame did a great job of responding to the slow start of it. But, you know, I think we all looked at this season as another national championship level season. And that's why you look at guys like Nick Marsh that you can insert and hook up with CJ Carr. No, I think Notre Dame did a great job of adjusting on the fly. And so that's why I mentioned you got seven guys, Teyon Gray, what's his eligibility? The other seven were 3 years. Okay. So you now have eight guys with 19 years combined of eligibility and only one of which McKinney has less than 2 years. So I give Marcus Freeman and Mike Martin credit for the adjustment that they made on the fly. I'm not saying they were going to turn their nose up at Graham and Porter, but they were looking for guys with between Strong and Marsh, they had a combined 211 career receptions. Graham and Porter have 10.
I'd rather go to Graham and Porter, either one of them, than not than Marsh, obviously.
Right. Strong. Okay. Strong. That's fair. Strong.
No. I wouldn't even. Yeah. But Marsh, I mean, the way Marsh is in a different category, I think Strong's in a different category too.
Definitely. I'm not, yeah. he's not in Marsh's category, but he is a volume receiver with great size. And Duff, the other receiver, is it Dunn or Duff? The other receiver at Rutgers is 6'6" and put up, you know, numbers comparable to Strong, even better.
He didn't enter.
Yeah. I would just say, look, is it an adjustment? Yeah. I think it's, Notre Dame wanted to get out of the exclusive one-year rental market. Did they want to get out of it as much as they actually did get out of it? I'm not sure. And I also think, like, look, I don't think we do a great job of this usually of, like, well, is the market different? Because Texas Tech and Indiana, what were they in the portal last year? I mean, obviously they were aggressive, but there was not this overlap with Notre Dame. Like, Notre Dame was not recruiting against Indiana, which now is a thing. Or Texas Tech, which is really a thing. So it's like, if you want the same guys that we're going to prioritize the portal people want, then you're going to have a hard time. Like, even Notre Dame, you're going to have a hard time winning those battles in the same way or similar way. Texas Tech and Indiana probably don't prioritize high school recruiting as much. Notre Dame does. That's where Notre Dame is putting their resources and their money. So I think that just an acknowledgement of, like, today's market is not last year's market. And did that take a minute for Notre Dame to adjust to? Maybe. But if you're going to get into I mentioned the bidding war with Ohio State and winning that, and that's great. If a bidding war with Indiana and Texas Tech that's a different fight. And those are hard to win.
And that's fine. Marcus Freeman said over and over again, he said yesterday, we're going to major in high school recruiting. I think that's exactly the approach. That's exactly the priority Notre Dame should emphasize.
Next question is from Ginger Dad. Over under on additional portal takes this cycle. Let's not include Gray. I think he was including Gray.
Yeah.
He was including Gray, but we're not going to include Gray.
When did he?
He said that question yesterday.
That was a late. Oh, yeah. Gray wasn't in yet. So his number was 3.5.
Okay. So
Gray's in. So let's say 2.5. Is that fair?
Sure. If you include prefer walk-ons, it's over. But I assume this guy's not included.
Yeah, I don't think that's what the reference is.
But yeah, the preferred walk-on is Max Herleman and Jake Tefelski. It's a lot more important than some rando dude that you recruit.
Yeah, well, I guess if you eliminate rando dudes.
Rando dudes, yeah. I mean, Max Herleman.
I go under. Like, nobody of the top eight guys, they're not going to get another guy like those eight.
Okay. That's
not only would it be under, I would put it at zero.
Well, and I think the emphasis has now died down a little bit now that you got that second defensive tackle. Would that be accurate? Yeah. Like, I don't think that they're pushing. Oh, yeah. They're not pushing for additional guys.
Yeah.
Like they were 24 hours, 48 hours ago.
It wouldn't surprise me if they got a quarterback down the road. Like,
that's true.
You know,
that's
a grad transfer could pop in whenever they want. You know, and I think Freeman sort of referenced this yesterday. I guess I was always a little confused, like, why they were going after the Mercer guy to begin with. But if you find somebody who's just like, hey, I want to come and be a Notre Dame football player for a year, cool, do that. You're backing up CJ Carr and, like, you can run the scout team. Like, that's, there would still be value in that.
I always figured they would get that.
And they probably still will.
Yeah. But that doesn't count as part of your top eight unless.
No.
I'd say under.
I'd say under.
They're going to get a couple preferred walk-ons for positions of need. Maybe might be a quarterback, but that's still under. Like, if you're looking at, is there more portal splash coming? Like, because in the next 2 days and or 4 days, I'm sorry, no, 2 days plus IU and Miami. I don't think there's a big splash left. It'd be fun though if there's one more splash plus a couple preferred walk-ons. I really mean that though. Like, the preferred walk-ons, when you lose keep saying Zinter. Zinter's gonna be on this podcast almost as much as Cole Mullins. But when you say Zinter and guys like that that you lose, you do need non-freshman special teamers, because it's not as easy as people think to play special teams at a high level at Notre Dame. And know all the stuff you have
not
to
at, do. Not at Marty Biagi.
That's what I mean. With Marty Biagi having Max Herleman, or just throw a freshman defensive back in there. He'll get run over.
Speaking of that, did you see where Zinter ended up?
Yeah, Rice.
Somebody's going to get run over on special teams next year.
Yes, they are. They really are.
in the home opener of 2026.
I thought he'd go Stanford with the grad program, but Rice is no slouch for the grad program situation there. Yeah, there's the neutral site. I mean, I was thinking Burnham was going to go to Wisconsin, and then Bulla is at Michigan State, and now his Inter went to Rice. He could have had it's going to happen more and more pretty soon.
Evangeli. It's not too late.
That's right. Our final question from Porter Power. This is an interesting one. Give me something you love about modern college football, something you really, really don't, and the one thing you would change.
Pete, go ahead.
Oh, what I love about modern college football. I do love the playoff. I would change how freaking obsessed we are with the playoff.
That's right. Yeah.
Outside of the playoff itself. Like, I think the games are awesome. I love that the major six bowls, as we used to call them, like, now are all like awesome games. But the constant politicking about and writing about the playoff and everything is through the prism of the playoff. Like, and I'm very guilty of this myself, but it's just like, this is what people want to read about. I hate that part. So what I don't like and what I would change are the same thing. I would make the focus on that a lot less. And like, could we just enjoy the games in September, October, November? Because it's just like, I mean, even just the where we are with the USC series ending, it ended because of the playoff, essentially, which sucks. You know, you want to talk about de-emphasizing the regular season. That's eliminating a 100-year-old rivalry to make yourself 8% more likely to make the playoff and then lose in the first round. Like, that, what are, like, it's lurched too far towards the college basketball and got there way faster than I thought it was going to.
Yeah, I'm with you on what I would change. I don't know. It's impossible because, as you said, people want it. Coverage.
I would start with those Tuesday night shows.
September. Yo, I would drop the show. I maybe 16 teams will help people not be so obsessed with who's going to get left out when it's October 15th. You know,
I would hope
that you don't. I mean, the shows aren't going away, but it would be great if Notre Dame beat Georgia Tech in October. Remember 2024?
Mm-hmm.
The whole conversation was about if Notre Dame can make the playoff and what the percentage was, and it kept changing during the game. It was October. Like that I get that is a great graphic for the last game of the year when Notre Dame is playing Stanford. It's more exciting than the game for most people watching it, the Notre Dame-Stanford game.
Yeah.
The last weekend of the year. But the playoff, the desire to talk about it, everything is about it. It does ruin enjoyment of games. It ruins our, like, we go on we'll get podcast questions. After August, I'm not accepting a playoff podcast question until October. No, because August is what a playoff stuff, playoff available. You know, are they playing like a playoff team?
Or how about,
we gotta do our part.
If Notre Dame finishes 10-2, will they make the playoffs?
Like, I don't care. That is the thing I would change, is the focus on the playoffs. I like the games too, Pete. 16 makes some sense. Although, as I said, the 16th team is
well, the SEC and Big Ten are talking about 24. How about that?
Yeah, well, they still won't win it. Well, the Big Ten will. Thing I love, I loved the playoff run last year. I don't love the playoff more than I love a 4-team playoff, because those games are great too. Like, I guess I like that more teams can win it, because you know what? Other than IU, Miami would have been left out of a lot of playoffs here. Oregon would have been left out of some playoff. So I at least having teams that can win it. I'm sorry. Here we go. Ohio State and Alabama aren't going to win and Georgia aren't going to win every year anymore. So I love NIL that they can't win every year.
Yeah, that's like a positive change.
That's the positive perform at the NIL makes it so other teams can win.
Yeah, because if we had this new playoff format, but the old portal NIL rules, I think the new playoff would be awful. Because like every game would look like Indiana, Alabama.
He's getting shredded left and right by Alabama.
But it would be Alabama on the other side of it. It's like, we've already seen that.
Yeah, we've had two 12-team playoffs, and three of the four finalists have been Indiana, Notre Dame, and Miami, which is that's off the chart, but Notre Dame, right, you know, right. And Miami hasn't been in a while, and Ohio State last year. I don't know that I can bring it down to one thing, just the magnitude of the game. It's, you know, game day. Is there anything more awesome than game day? I love that.
For the reference, people listening, he did not mean the show Game Day.
Yeah.
I don't want you to be taken wrong.
I'm pretty sure I don't mean,
yeah, I need a quote spell check from you, T.O. Obviously, when I'm saying wide receiver instead of offensive lineman, you know, I sound like a curmudgeon, but the magnitude of the dollars and cents now, I don't like that part of it. It's too much. I have no problem, of course, with players getting paid and being adequately compensated. But when unproven, in many instances, relatively unproven big time quarterbacks are making more than all of your coordinators combined, I don't think that's good for the game. And, you know, what I would change is the absurdity of every player being a free agent all the time.
You're saying 1 year free agency type thing or one time transfer?
Well, from year to year. Yeah.
I'm saying you think a one time. So that another way to change
the solution to it. I mean, or something along those lines. We have what quarterback? He was in the portal for 48 hours and he left. He already left the team that he had signed with.
Okay. I think it was down to about 12 guys.
Yeah, I was going to say, Kenny Minchie did it.
I don't like that either. Yeah. When Dante Moore decided to go back to Oregon, Raiola had been committed to them for 48 hours and he was back in the portal again. I just don't think that that's great for the game. I don't think it's great for the game at all.
I would say, I mean, one thing that I would love to get back to, like, just the old conferences, if I could change that back. And I feel like probably people in the sport would be like, yeah, we kind of jumped the gun on that one. I know it's hard to put the toothpaste back into the tube, but just where we are with NIL and the portal together and the talent being dispersed, I would love it if we could get back to just how it was before. Because college football, I love the regional flavor of it. And that has been NFLized, if that's a verb, by, you know, the Big Ten's desire to be on both coasts.
I think throughout this conversation, the number one thing I dislike most, Pete started with, the Notre Dame USC rivalry not being more important than the 8% chance to make the playoff. Like, I still wish, yeah, if you had the regional rivalry thing was so fun on Thanksgiving weekend. It was so much fun.
Yeah.
That those games mattered that much to those fan bases, and you watched it and you felt it. That is the biggest thing missing, and the super conferences that destroyed that, because, I mean, it literally destroyed the Pac-12 rivalries. They lost. They went other ways. I mean, I'll never forget watching Oregon State when it was snowing in the Civil War when I was a kid, and then all of a sudden I found out they were playing in September. I was like, I don't care at all, because this is not anybody right now. But the destruction of the rivalries, I think, is the saddest part, because you do need that in college sports. And it's why when we did the ill-timed top 10 series to start the year, we didn't realize the portal was going to be there. We're not the only ones that didn't realize the portal was starting then. But the top 10, when I was like going down the top 10 Notre Dame games to watch on YouTube, I kept bumping up ND-USC 89 because I kept looking at all the fights and all the trash talking and all the back and forth scoring. I'm like, this is one of the greatest things I've ever rewatched. It's absolutely fantastic to look at how much they hate each other for 4 hours. Like, I feel like it's hard to duplicate that anywhere. And rivalries are my thing that I think went away most. I don't care how much people are paid. It's, as Pete said, it's other people's money. Four-time transfers are dumb, but do whatever you want to do. I don't care. Coaches get replaced and go anywhere they want to go. I don't care about that as much as the lack of rivalry. I like things that don't affect my delicate sensibilities, and the lack of rivalries is my answer there. Maybe don't pay bad kickers either, but that's neither here nor there. For Tim Priester of Irish Illustrated and Pete Sampson of The Athletic, I'm Tim O'Malley. This has been Irish Illustrated Insider. We'll be back on Monday when the portal is officially closed. And Pete, if you can join us, you can offer your pick on the national championship game as well. Till then, guys, thanks for watching and listening. Irish Illustrated Insider.